Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to the Al Franken podcast ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app.
This episode is brought in part to you by Audible, your go-to destination for thrilling audio entertainment. Whether you're looking for a hair-raising experience to enjoy while you're on the move or eager to dive into sinister and shocking tales, Audible has an exclusive collection of thrillers from best-selling authors that will keep you on the edge of your seat. Like James Patterson's first audio-only thriller, The Coldest Case. Experience stories like never before, where every chilling detail is brought to life by captivating sound design. Plus, as an Audible member, choose one title a month to make yours forever. And now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Just visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
Hey, everybody. Peter and I are taking a well-deserved break for Christmas and New Year's. And when I say well-deserved, we did 44 podcasts this year. So we're repeating a couple of best ofs. This one is Neil Katyal. Neil, of course, the former acting Solicitor General during the Obama administration. The Solicitor General argues on behalf of the administration before the Supreme Court. And since Neil left that job, he continues to argue before the court and win so much that he has the distinction of winning more SCOTUS cases than any other minority lawyer. Neil's Indian, Indian. And you'll see in this, I give Neil a little shit here because he can't tell me if that includes Jews. And we are a minority group. What Neil and I talked about when we recorded this a few months ago was the various options that the Department of Justice will have and how they prosecute Donald Trump, assuming they do, which they have to. What charges does Merrick Garland indict him on? Do you do everything? Do you just do the most cut and dried, like the classified documents? And Neil walks us through that. So I thought this one was a timely one to repeat because it's really, really a great one, you know, for a change.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
We met, finally, I had never met you, at the Dead & Company show.
It was amazing.
Wasn't it?
It was.
Mayer is so good. He's grown into that so brilliantly.
Yeah, and I have to say, like, so my last Dead show before this was actually Jerry Garcia's last show at Soldier Field back in 1995.
Oh, boy.
And In part, I just, you know, when they started resuming, I just didn't want to go and so on. And then when John Mayer started playing, and I have to say, I just didn't know much about him besides, you know, your body is a wonderland and all that. And I was like, huh, this is like a weird choice. Is this going to work at all? And then, you know, I got to spend some time with our mutual friend, Mickey Hart, the drummer, who said some really great things about him. And so I made the trip up to New York to see him, and Mayer blew me away. I mean, he has the same kind of just laid back rhythmic quality that Mickey has, and watching them together, I just thought it was beautiful.
Yeah. And he's made it his own, which is, I mean, boy, people who aren't deadheads are going to get so mad at this part. So let's stop it. But I wanted to talk about a couple of things. One, you were solicitor, acting solicitor general, which is, of course, during the Obama administration. And of course, that role is to argue the administration's case in the Supreme Court. I've seen a number of times you listed as the member of a minority group that has argued more cases before the Supreme Court. And I asked you that night, does that count Jews? And did you look that up? Did you research it?
I have to say, I didn't have time to look into that question.
So, I know you're arguing a lot of cases before
exactly,
the court.
Yeah,
and maybe that's why you didn't have time.
Yes, but you know, I've argued 45 cases there so Jesus. Far, and I've got two or three more just this in the next couple months, including on Ketanji Jackson's first day. So I'm excited to be doing that, and then I've got a big death penalty case in November.
Okay, well, you know, you have people do research for you.
I'll find out, my friend. You know, you know, it is interesting. I married someone who's Jewish, Joanna Rosen, and at our engagement party, my brother-in-law gave a toast about how Hindus are Jews and Jews are Hindus, and he outlined so many of the cultural similarities between the two groups. It's actually really remarkable. And even our wedding ceremonies, we had back-to-back ceremonies in which the mandap, which is how Hindus get married, was very, very similar to the huppah, down to the four pillars and things like that. So we're always struck by the commonalities between the two traditions.
Well, Indians are the new Jews. I mean, what did your parents do? Your parents came from India, right?
Yeah, my parents came from India. My mom is a pediatrician, and my dad was a chemical engineer. My mom's still alive. She still works.
I rest my case, by the way. A doctor and an engineer.
Exactly. And by the way, they hated lawyers. I mean, my parents cried when I went to law school. They just thought it was like the biggest waste of a career.
They wanted you to be an engineer or a doctor?
Doctor. But when I married a doctor, I was cool. But up until then, real problem.
Why can't you be Atul Gawande?
Exactly.
I'm doing them as if they're Jewish. No, but I think it's true. There's so much in common. And I got a lot of ground to cover. I want to ask a question I think all my listeners are asking, which is, where is this going? If you were Garland, what would you do? What are the crimes that he's committed? That what charges can they bring against him? What will they do? What will they bring against him? If you're in Garland's position, what are you thinking about in terms of prosecution? Do you charge him with a lot of stuff? Do you charge him with one that's easiest to convict on? I'll just go.
All right. So first of all, I think Donald Trump is facing kind of four different criminal investigations, and it's important to just get them all on the table first. Two are federal and two are state. One federal investigation is Trump's role in January 6th, the insurrection, the attack on the Capitol, and those kinds of crimes, conspiracy, seditious conspiracy, obstruction of an official proceeding. Those are the main ones there. So that's one bucket of crimes.
Kind of the worst thing you can do.
Yeah, basically, you know, it doesn't get much worse than that. Seditious conspiracy is kind of like the apex of the federal criminal code. But yet we are having a serious conversation about whether Donald Trump should be indicted for it. So we can go through that in a little bit. So that's one. Mm-hmm. The other is this all the classified material and national security material that he has at Mar-a-Lago and that he hid from the government and that he's refused to give back and lied about. So those are both kind of Espionage Act and kind of national security charges and also standard obstruction charges.
Right.
So those are at the federal level. Those are decided by Merrick Garland and Merrick Garland alone. There'll be staff recommendations and so on, but Garland is the decider as the Attorney General. You then have two investigations going on in two different states. In Trump's, you know, former home state of New York, you have an investigation into accounting fraud, in which the CFO of his criminal, organization, the Trump Organization, which is facing a criminal indictment, his CFO has already pled guilty to some of these fraud violations. That's done at the New York state level. That will be decided by the Attorney General of New York, Tish James. You then have an investigation going on in Fulton County, Georgia, which involves vote manipulation. And that state investigation is being run by the local district attorney there, Fannie Willis, and she will be the ultimate decider on that. So that all is a long way of saying, you know, each one of these is separate, but they may have overlap. It may be that something discovered in one investigation will matter to another. Indeed, we already know that the Georgia and New York prosecutors have started getting information and working with Congress and the January 6th committee. So there is, some overlap. It may be that when the search was executed at Mar-a-Lago, other documents were found relevant to these other investigations. I don't know. We'll time will tell.
In terms of the Georgia investigation, I've always thought that the Raffensperger tape is a crime. It's obviously a crime. All I need is to find 11,780 votes. And later he says, if you don't do this, you can be in a lot of trouble, which is a threat. Correct. And it's on friggin' tape. I mean, Correct. It's on tape. And so to me,
Lordy, there are tapes. Lordy. Yes.
I mean, exactly. In Jerry Maguire, the line is, you had me at hello. You had me at the Raffensperger tape. This is a crime, as far as I'm concerned. So, and that is a federal crime. I know she's doing it. She's doing the investigation, but it's a federal election, right? That's a crime. It's a federal crime.
It's federal and state both.
Yes.
And absolutely, it may be that the federal justice department's also investigating that, but I completely agree with you about the substance of the tape. Indeed, within 6 hours of it being released back in January of 2021, I wrote an op-ed in the Washington Post saying this is going to lead to Trump's impeachment. At that point, everyone's like, oh, you're ridiculous, blah, 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 go away.
And that's before, of course, the riot.
Before the riot.
Yeah, it was 2 days before or a day before?
Yeah, I think 3 days. I think it's January 3rd, yeah, which is January 6th.
Okay, yeah.
So, but I think you're absolutely right to say that is a clear-cut crime. You've got it on tape. You've got both, in criminal law, you need two things. You need an actus reus, a bad criminal act, and you need a mens rea, a criminal intent, a bad intent. And that tape reveals both of them. Trump is threatening this person unless he finds him the votes. And he's doing it in the most corrupt way possible. Go find me these votes. I mean, I grew up in Chicago. I've never heard of even that kind of vote fraud.
My favorite thing about it is that he expected Raffensperger to do this, I think. And so can you imagine what that press conference would have looked like?
Well, but, it's not surprising, right, that he expected that because he hires and works with so many lackeys who roll over and, and do his bidding, even when it's a betrayal of the Constitution of the United States and our most fundamental precepts of democracy. Trump's not dumb. He's been able to get away with this time and again.
But can you imagine what that press conference would have looked like? Raffensperger going, I'm Brad Raffensperger, the Secretary of State of Georgia, and we've had a change in the tally and the new winner in the presidential election here in Georgia is Donald Trump by one vote. I mean, that's what Trump thought he'd do. Okay, he'll do that. So if you're in Garland's position, what are you thinking about in terms of prosecution? Do you charge him with a lot of stuff? You charge him one of the easiest to convict on?
Well, Garland is a far more moderate, and I consider myself a centrist, but Garland is really as moderate as it gets. This is the guy who I'm sure has zero interest in being the first Attorney General of the United States to indict a former president of the United States. It's so anathema to the way he thinks. But Trump's behavior, both in committing the crimes and lying about it and obstructing it afterwards, in my mind, make it inevitable that Garland is going to ultimately bring a criminal indictment against Donald Trump. The question is just how big or small it will be, but I don't see a way at this point not to. So just starting with, and I think Garland will start with, the classified and national security information investigation from Mar-a-Lago. So at this point, we know several things. We know that Donald Trump stole these government documents. We know he lied about it. We know he hid the documents and then he kept them hidden. That the archives asked for them back and they said they turned some back but refused to turn them all back. The lawyer then certified for Trump that they had turned over everything. And that was in response to a grand jury subpoena saying, turn over all the documents that bear the markings classified. So the lawyer said, okay, here are some documents, and I certify that's it. And then the Justice Department got information, I suspect from a confidential witness on the inside, that there were more classified documents. So they then went to a magistrate judge, a federal judge, and said, authorize this search. We have probable cause. That means we think it's more likely than not that crimes were committed in Mar-a-Lago and that there's evidence there. The judge signs that warrant, they execute it, and lo and behold, they find the goods. They find 184 more classified documents. So how does the Justice Department really look the other way at this point? It'd be one thing if Trump said right away, I'm so sorry, this was a mistake. You know, I was busy planning a coup. I didn't have time to pack up the office properly. You know, whatever.
His lawyer would say, do not say that.
Exactly. Whatever. But instead, he thumbed his nose at law enforcement at every turn, both before and after the requests by the grand jury. And so, you know, the Justice Department, when you're evaluating this stuff, and I've sat in on those meetings with the prosecutors, you're sitting there trying to apply the rule book from the past. And probably the most important thing in that rule book is, has this target been contrite? Have they been forthcoming ever since that we started talking to them? That's a hugely important thing in deciding whether to prosecute. What has this guy done? He has lied, refused, obstructed, kept calling them my documents, accused the FBI of planting these documents at one point, now claiming they planted a picture or, you know, staged a photo and stuff like that. This is the worst
amazing,
way. Yeah, this
stupid.
Is the worst way for a criminal defendant to behave facing a serious investigation. And it is running right into the department's general view, which is, if you're going to commit crimes, one thing, but if you're going to lie about it afterwards to us, you're going to jail.
Now, it seems to me that, I mean, yes, this is kind of open and shut. Everything you described, every step of that was a crime. Every step of it, everything.
And different crimes. So it's not just the classified information or the national security information he retained. It's that he lied to the authorities about it. I mean, there's a separate charge here called obstruction of a grand jury proceeding in Section 412. And it's just simply, if the grand jury asks for something and you say you gave it to him and you didn't, that's a crime just by itself. And they asked here not just for classified documents, but any documents that are marked that way, whether they're truly classified or not. So his whole kind of bogus, crazy theory that he had some sort of standing order to declassify, I don't know, covert operations and everything whenever he brought them to Mar-a-Lago, which is an insane theory. But even if that's true, it's not going to get him out of these charges.
We're going to take a break for a moment. We'll be right back.
It's 3 o'clock somewhere. Time for a My Mochi ice cream snack. My Mochi ice cream is cool, creamy scoops of premium ice cream wrapped in sweet, pillowy dough. And get this, all of My Mochi's fabulous flavors, like strawberry, mango, double chocolate, and cookies and cream, are only around 80 calories per piece. Talk about a guilt-free indulgent experience. Each box of My Mochi ice cream has 6 perfectly portioned, gluten-free mochis that are great for grab-and-go. So feel good while curbing your afternoon cravings, or the midnight munchies. Yeah. You know who you are, with the joyfully chill sensation of My Mochi ice cream. Find My Mochi ice cream at Target or visit MyMochi.com to locate a grocery store near you.
What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop, customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's what happens when you give Grammarly to your entire team. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks, like generating an instant first draft in your company voice or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly. Easier said, done.
The thing to me is that the most serious crime he committed was January 6th, was the try and subvert a Democratic election, lying about who won, and fomenting a riot in the Capitol. And that to me, and we've had months of this, the January 6th committee hearings have exceeded my expectations. I don't see how you don't do that. You don't charge in that. And I wonder what you need to prove there, because it's a very, very, very clear picture, yeah, cumulatively. And I think you had him at, you had him at Raffensperger. What's going on in your mind about that?
Yeah, so it's obviously not the kind of simple case that the classified documents, national security information cases, that's just so easy that my first year law students could bring that prosecution and win it, I think. The one about January 6th, I think, is just more complicated. It's more serious. And these crimes are, as we were talking about a moment ago, kind of the height of the U.S. criminal code. And there's no doubt in my mind, after sitting through and watching the January 6th hearings, that Trump is guilty of them. And I certainly think it would be not difficult at all to convict him of the charges related to January 6th. It's just that it's a more complicated narrative. Now, federal prosecutors all the time bring cases with complicated narratives. Almost every white-collar crime case is going to have these features, making it hard, for it to reduce to a simple soundbite. But ultimately, I think, again, Garland didn't start out wanting to bring a January 6th indictment against the president. I suspect he did against, anyone who invaded the Capitol or who contributed to that invasion of the Capitol in some financial way or some, obvious overt way. But I think that this is where the January 6th committee's work was so important, because what they did two things. They were able to marshal a ton of evidence that we didn't know. I mean, we had a whole impeachment proceeding with none of the people that, Cassidy Hutchinson and, people like that. None of those people showed up in the impeachment proceeding, but they all showed up in the January 6th hearings investigation. So we filled out a ton of facts that we didn't know before. So that's one thing about it. And the other is they did it in a way that made it intelligible, even though it's complicated, for the American public to understand. So to the extent Garland was worried, hey, this is a case that doesn't reduce to sound bites or whatever, what the beauty of the January 6th committee did in laying this out so with such storytelling was to make it intelligible for the American public and start to acculturate them to the idea that, unfortunately, our former president is a serious, serious federal felon. To kind of break it down, you know, I think there are three charges that the government will be looking at. And these are the three charges that were mentioned by the January 6th committee in a filing in federal court in California. And a federal district court judge, a very respected judge, Judge Carter, said there was probable cause to believe that Donald Trump committed at least two of these crimes. So one is called obstruction of an official government proceeding. It's Section 1512. And for the prosecutors, for Garland to win, they have to convince a jury that Donald Trump first obstructed or attempted to obstruct, second, a official proceeding, and third, that he did so corruptly. Okay? So the official proceeding here is easy. That's the counting of the votes on January 6th. That's about as official and solemn a proceeding as the Congress of the United States ever gets into. There's no dispute about that. The question is, did he obstruct that or attempt to obstruct it? So was he encouraging people to march on the Capitol and stop the count? The January 6th committee provided so much evidence that that's exactly what he was doing. And then the question, criminal intent, did he do so corruptly? And this is, again, where I think that the committee marshaled so much evidence. I mean, he was told repeatedly by everyone, down to his daughter, that he lost the election. I mean, Bill Barr said he lost the election and told him so. And what did he do when he found out that there were, you know, when there were weapons on January 6th? He said, remove the magnometers, remove the metal detectors. Let them
They're not here to harm me.
Yeah, not here
to harm me. Well, who are they there
to harm? Exactly. Exactly. And then for over three hours, right, what is 181 minutes, he sat on his hands and did zilch, nothing. Didn't call the military, didn't call the National Guard, didn't call the Justice Department, didn't call Homeland Security. The Capitol is literally being invaded, and none of this, you know, he does nothing. Instead, it took Mike Pence to actually do something.
Well, he didn't put out a video telling them to go home.
Yeah, later, he eventually got to that. But even the committee was so beautiful with those outtakes. I mean, you know, showing this guy still couldn't admit that he had lost the election at that point.
But the fact that it took 3 hours and he's watching this violence.
Yeah.
And that is dispositive. And I love the Cipollone tape where it was, did you think the president should tell people to leave? Yes. Did so-and-so? Yes. Did so-and-so? Yes. Did so-and-so? Yes. And it was like everybody there was saying, Jesus Christ, man.
Yeah.
People are dying. People are going to die.
100%. Total crook. I mean, and if nothing else, just the most incompetent act a president of the United States has engaged in our lifetimes, sitting there and doing nothing while there's bloodshed and an armed attack on our Capitol for the first time since the War of 1812.
Well, he was hoping that the Secret Service would take him to Andrews Air Force Base and fly him to Yemen. But the vice president, you know, I mean, the vice president, for a reason, wouldn't get in that car. Right? Because he knew he didn't trust the driver.
This would be the first time I think I've said that vice president engaged in a smart act, but maybe he did.
Yeah, we see. That was smart. I'm not sure it was the first time, but I can't recall.
Exactly.
I can't disprove that. I wish I could. What did he do? Something. Anyway, I'll try to research that. And put it in the opening, in the monologue. Okay, so that's one.
Yeah, so that's one charge. The second charge is conspiracy to defraud the United States. And the idea there would be, you know, everyone voted, the U.S. government spent a lot of money on that election, a lot of resources and the like. And you've got a person who's trying to orchestrate an attempt to claim he won. And to throw out that lawful count. And one of the beautiful things about conspiracy charges, it goes all the way back to England several centuries ago, is that by design, the plot doesn't actually need to succeed. It's all about the agreement to do something illegal. It's not about actually pulling it off. So prosecutors don't need to wait, for example, until a bomb goes off, or here until the election results are wrongfully thrown out before bringing charges. And so in order to prove that, they're going to have to show that Donald Trump agreed with someone else to try and throw out the election. And here the relevant targets, John Eastman, Trump's lawyer, is one. Rudy Giuliani is another. And Mark Meadows is a third. And we know that the government is looking at all three of them for possible criminal activity with respect to January 6th. And one thing about the conspiracy doctrine, and you know, I wrote a whole article about this in the Yale Law Journal, like a 100-page scholarly article about a decade ago, is about the idea that the doctrine is very flexible in order to give prosecutors the ability to flip defendants. So the whole name of the game with conspiracy charges, because it does take two to have a conspiracy, two to tango, is that you try as the prosecutor to get one of them to turn on the other in a prisoner's dilemma-like situation. Mm-hmm. Now here, you know, Eastman, Giuliani, Meadows, these are all guys who owe everything at this point to Trump. I mean, you know, they've had careers in the past, but at this point, they're kind of all in. But they are looking at serious jail time. And so if you're Garland and you're trying to decide, do I bring a conspiracy charge against Donald Trump? One key question is going to be, have I been able to flip these other people to get them to testify against Trump? And if you can get their former lawyer involved in this, I don't know what we call Rudy Giuliani, kind of a Four Seasons conference planner slash lawyer, I don't know.
He's now kind of a former lawyer. At least he can't. He's been disbarred, hasn't he?
Yeah, I think at least provisionally. I think he can't act. Yeah. So, but at the time, obviously, he was acting something of a lawyer. But if you get those people to flip, or if you get the president's chief of staff to flip, that prosecution looks a lot easier than it would otherwise. That's the second bucket. And then the third one, and the biggie, is what's called seditious conspiracy. And as I said, it is one of the most serious charges in the federal code, but it's also, I think, actually the hardest one to bring against Trump. And that's because it requires prosecutors to prove that two or more people agreed to use force to delay the execution of a law or to overthrow the government. I think Trump's defense here, if he can get a lawyer to actually work for him, but if he can, I think that lawyer would say, you know, Trump wanted to delay, maybe he did want to delay certification of the election, but he never formally agreed to use force with someone else. And it's going to be hard to prove otherwise unless you can flip Eastman or Giuliani or someone like that.
Let me ask you about this, because Hutchinson testified to this at the Willard, where there was a war room. And that Meadows very badly wanted to get there, but couldn't, finally dialed in. And I believe the people that were there were like Roger Stone and Steve Bannon. And was Mike Flynn there?
Right. No, it is. It's the whole Star Wars bar scene.
Right. And Stone was in contact with both the Oath Keepers and who have been charged with seditious conspiracy. And with the Proud Boys, who left the rally early to start it, right? And it seems to me the one half of a session in the hearings that I was very disappointed in was when they brought in the former spokesman for the Oath Keepers and the guy who was duped into, you know, and whose life was ruined. I was hoping that we would find some connection between the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys and Roger Stone or that war room.
Yeah. So I agree with you that I think ultimately the evidence looks like, it wouldn't shock me at all if the evidence shows that the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys, who've already been charged with seditious conspiracy, that they were working with other people high up in Trump's orbit, whether it's Roger Stone or someone else.
So you know, they could flip.
They could flip. But what I'm saying is, in the absence of that, I think Trump's going to have been careful not to ever use the word force or synonyms of force directly. you know, he acts very much like a mob boss in this way. And you read in, and this is in Michael Cohen's book, you know, for chapter after chapter, if you work for him, you're supposed to infer exactly what he wants and he won't directly say it.
It'd be a shame.
Exactly.
If Ukraine would have to change its name back to the Ukraine. You hear what I'm saying?
Right. So while we all know, and we can, you know, as commentators and so on, have a conclusion, in order to be, you know, a criminal trial requires, you know, guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. And every person on that jury has to convict. You can't afford a single person not to. It requires a unanimous verdict. And so when you have things like this, even if it's common sense and we can infer certain things, that's generally not enough for a prosecution. So, you know, we don't know all the things that the Justice Department has, but I'm just trying to say that, you know, that as they evaluate what's in their evidentiary record, I think seditious conspiracy is going to be the hardest one for them to actually charge against Donald Trump.
Okay, so let me ask you this, though. If you're prosecuting someone, can't you do multiple charges, right? And
sure.
The jury can say, seditious conspiracy, not guilty.
Sure, absolutely. You've always, as a prosecutor, have an ethical duty to make sure that, you know, that you can meet the standard of proof. And obviously, you don't have to have a certainty about it, but you do need to satisfy, you know, a standard in legal ethics that, you know, you can't just bring any unsupported charge against anyone. But obviously here, you know, I don't think there's any risk of anything like that. But still, sometimes you actually just bring a more streamlined case because you want it to be simple and clear for the jury. You know, sometimes if you overplay your hand, it can rebound and hurt the low-hanging fruit.
Right.
Now, one question, you know, that I think is implicit in what you're asking is, okay, there are these two totally separate buckets here. There's January 6th and there's Mar-a-Lago and the documents there. Is that one prosecution or is it two? And I think it's two totally separate prosecutions, just because they're really pretty different from one another. And indeed, venue may be different from one another because it may be that the Mar-a-Lago indictment happens in Florida. It doesn't have to.
It seems like that one is so cut and dried, but, you know.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, it's I'm glad to see Merrick Garland acting appropriately here and with some toughness and resolve. I don't think that there is a way that he can look past this.
Trump made one mistake. He pissed Merrick Garland off. He made just one mistake. My God. This is astonishing.
Well, I do want to say something about it, just because I've worked with Garland over the years, I've argued cases before him and so on. Mm-hmm. You know, whether you piss Garland off or not, that's not going to matter one bit to how Garland's going to approach this. He is going to be worried about, you know, any defendant that lies to his folks. And, you know, that's standard department policy to think through that when you're thinking about a criminal indictment. But I have no doubt in my mind that Garland is going to sit there and try and take himself out of the equation. And no human being can do that 100%. But I have more faith that he would do it than virtually anyone in this town.
Yeah, that's what I understand about him and why when he wasn't taken up for the court, it was, you know, the Biden rule. Don't get me started on that. Not taking him up for the court because he's like the perfect Supreme Court justice, you know?
Yeah.
And they didn't want to hear him because everyone would have seen that. Right. So
100%. I mean, yeah. You know, this is Senator Orrin Hatch, a very prominent Republican, a chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee, said, you know, can never say a bad word about Merrick Garland.
What's next? What do we? I guess the January 6th committee is going to resume, right?
Yeah, so we're expecting some hearings, probably later this month or next month. I think that they have a fair amount of loose threads that they want to wrap up on that committee. I think prosecutors now are studying that record already to decide whether to bring an indictment. So that's what's going on here in D.C. And then in the field in Mar-a-Lago, the U.S. Attorney's Office, in consultation with Justice Department officials in Washington and the intelligence community, are trying to figure out how harmful what Trump did is, and whether an indictment should be brought. There is a general Justice Department policy that you don't indict 60 days before an election. That's really about when someone's running. Donald Trump is not running, much as he acts sometimes like he is. So I don't think the policy formally prevents the department from doing anything, you know, even in October. But I suspect that Garland will wait until after November. If he doesn't move very quickly, and, you know, I don't see any reason why he would move, you know, this week, next week. There's no reason. Get your ducks in a row. Make sure that everything is right. Triple check everything before you do something like this. But, you know, right now, if I had to predict, I think we are looking at an indictment of Donald Trump for the Mar-a-Lago classified and national security documents and the accompanying obstruction of justice in November.
It's kind of interesting because Trump, it was suggested that he had a strategy of announcing that he was running, so that he was a candidate, so he could say that any prosecution was political. But now you see Republicans going, don't.
Right. And also it's sort of interesting that the RNC is refusing to fund his defense at Mar-a-Lago. They're paying for his January 6th stuff, but they won't even pay for what he's doing at Mar-a-Lago, because I think they've realized this is, you know, so atrocious and so beyond pay.
But then again, they called the January 6th incursion legitimate political discourse.
Yes, exactly.
Holy crap. Well, this is a good overview for my listeners. I just appreciate being able to tune in to see you on MSNBC almost every night and get the latest update on each thing that's breaking. But I really, really appreciate this overview. And I think my listeners will as well.
Well, thank you. And I appreciate both your service to the government, your service to our humanity and keeping us sane, and for this terrific podcast. So it's been a privilege to be on with you.
Did you hear that, everybody? Okay. Well, thanks a lot.
Thank you, my friend.
Well, I hope you enjoyed listening. That beautiful music is by Leo Kottke, the great Leo Kottke. I want to thank Peter Ogburn for producing this podcast. We'll talk again next week. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Al Franken podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
This episode is brought to you by the effortlessly scrumptious bite of Skinny Pop Popcorn. Imagine this: perfectly popped, endlessly delicious kernels, a symphony of just three simple ingredients: popcorn, sunflower oil, and a sprinkle of salt. No compromise, just pure snacking freedom. And hey, if you're up for a twist, dive into flavors like zesty white cheddar to sweet and salty kettle. Every bite's a delight, light and oh so tasty. Shop Skinny Pop now.
Once upon a beat. Remember those stories and fables that would capture your imagination and you couldn't wait to see how they would unfold? And now, when you read them as an adult, you think some of these old tales could use a fresh spin. We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remix, and reimagine for the kids in your life today. Join me, DJ Fuse, and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, as we spin up new tales in the New Kids and Family Podcast, Once Upon a Beat. Yeah. Wondery and Tinkercast are bringing you a jam-packed, music-filled weekly party where hip-hop and fables meet. It's Once Upon a Beat. Follow Once Upon a Beat on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Wondery Kids Plus in Apple Podcasts. Once Upon a Beat.